Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but lately when Christians and other conservatives get together, presidential potential nominee Donald Trump seems to suck all the oxygen out of the room. Well, my friend, I understand what you're saying. I have tried to be careful on this program. I have tried to be balanced on this program. In fact, last week, Trump's name was not even mentioned once on the Bob Siegel Show. We aired, and I have witnesses. We aired a Trump-free show. However, we do have a very important election coming up during very turbulent times where the future of our country is on the line. And so talking about him is simply unavoidable. In previous weeks, you'll recall that certain monologues of mine have referred to Trump as the lesser of two evils. Now, my column, Forbidden Table Talk, that's published both by CDN and the San Diego Rostra, provides written versions of these monologues, and there have been many comments. I want to respond to just one of them tonight, and then I will introduce my special guest. This one is from Craig, and I had, you'll recall, in a tongue-in-cheek fashion, given Donald Trump some advice. I said the next time Hillary pulls out that war on women card, Trump should simply acknowledge Hillary's embracing of the new gender choice rules for locker rooms and say, Mrs. Clinton, in my heart of hearts, I feel that I am a woman. But I also mentioned more seriously that insults, meaning the insults of Donald Trump, are a problem only when they are unnecessary or untrue. And I said the Republican Party should stop all of their advice to Trump about toning down the rhetoric because in Hillary's case, nothing would need to be invented. He wouldn't have to come up with insults. All he'd have to do is speak the truth. Well, Craig says, in response to all this, if this is what's become of the Republican Party, I'll be looking for a new affiliation. Okay, well, Craig, I hope you caught the satire, but I did indeed encourage Trump to go after Hillary, not with petty, childish insults, but with a list of her abominable deeds, such as the Benghazi fiasco, the email server scandal, on and on and on. As for the Republican Party, Craig, I think the question of what's become of the Republican Party is something that should have been asked long before Trump came along. We gave them back the House in 2012. We gave them back the Senate in 2014. They have proven themselves spineless and worthless. Obama's executive orders of amnesty have taken place on their watch. Obama's destructive health care plan has been funded on their watch, and they could have defunded it. Obama's nightmare deal with Iran has been implemented on their watch. They have betrayed the Tea Party and other conservatives who put them in office. And so, Craig, I know you're sincere, but you'll pardon me if I am no longer concerned that much about the future of the Republican Party. There's no more time to worry about what club we belong to. Instead, we are down to being concerned about the future of America itself, period. There's no time to keep the party pure for the next 4 years while Hillary or Bernie or some other radical leftist finishes the job Obama began of fundamentally transforming America. Our Supreme Court weighs in the balance. And since this third branch of government gets away with overturning decisions of the other two branches, sometimes the other two branches together, and gets away with overturning laws democratically created by the population through ballot measures, well, then let's be clear. Soon it just will not matter anymore who the next president is, or what party controls Congress, or what party pretends to hold on to the supposed purity that in actuality they emptied themselves of years ago. Now, Craig also challenges my assertion, and you've been hearing me say this for many weeks, that voting for Trump is the lesser of two evils. And he mentions many conservatives who believe that Trump and Hillary are equally evil. Well, Craig, putting aside the fallacy of believing the truth is determined by the majority, and putting aside the fact that lately increasingly more conservatives are choosing to follow Trump anyway, the numbers don't concern me. What concerns me is this: when you say Trump is not the lesser of two evils, that is simply not true. Now, I want to be fair. I do want to be fair. I am willing to say that Trump might be equally evil. But once again, the highest stakes in the next election are the Supreme Court. Although our Constitution never gave courts the right to legislate from the bench, the precedence has nevertheless been established and accepted. If we get even one more liberal justice on the Supreme Court, the last remnants of our republic will evaporate. Do I know for sure that Trump will appoint a conservative justice? Well, he's given a nice impressive list, but then he went on the next day and he said, or maybe somebody else. So he does change his mind a lot. So do I know for sure that Trump will appoint a conservative justice? Of course not. Do I know for sure that a Trump appointee will make decisions based on what the Constitution actually says instead of offering a lot of mumbo jumbo about how the Constitution is a living, breathing document? No, there is no guarantee. I have no idea what Trump will do, but neither do you, Greg. Neither do you. However, and it's a significant however, we both know just exactly the kinds of justices that will be appointed under Hillary or Bernie or Biden or Elizabeth Warren or any Democrat hijacked by the left. And so, Craig, are you honestly claiming that a choice between the unknown or a surefire destructive path is not the lesser of two evils? After the fact, we might say that. If Trump wins, if Trump ends up appointing a liberal judge or a so-called moderate or a so-called conservative that ends up making liberal decisions, sure, well, then in that case, we'll look back with our 2020 hindsight and say, hey, it turned out after all that at the end of the day, Trump was not the lesser of two evils. But I've been hearing a lot of talk from fellow conservatives about obeying our conscience and about how we answer to God for our decision, and I appreciate that. That's important. And I consider myself one who obeys the conscience. I consider myself one who is going to answer to God for his decision. So let's try an analogy. I love analogies because I think sometimes it helps us to focus on a point we're missing. So here's your choice. You're living in Nazi Germany. You're living with your wife and small children. They depend on you for their survival. So it's not just about your survival. You're in charge of your whole family. You're living in the country in Germany. Your house is isolated, you have only two neighbors, and you only know one neighbor well. The neighbor you know well is a Nazi sympathizer. You're Jewish. Now, you and your neighbor used to get along, but not since the Nazis took over, not anymore. One night, you get a knock on your front door, you look out the window, it's the German police. They don't yet see you. They are not yet sure if you're home. You have only three choices. Choice one, slip out through your backyard with your family and see if one of your neighbors will hide you. Choice two, slip out through your backyard and see if the other neighbor will hide you. Choice three, stay put and do nothing. If you stay put, the police will bust your door down, arrest you, take you and your family off to some concentration camp. If you go to your Nazi sympathizing neighbor, you know for a fact that they will not help you. Indeed, they are probably the ones who ratted you out to the Gestapo in the first place. If you go to the other neighbor, you have no idea what they'll do. They might be Nazi sympathizers too. Then again, maybe they aren't. Maybe they can hide you and lie to the Gestapo when they drop by to inquire. Your conscience and your decency demand that you protect your family the best you can. Two choices will not protect them. One choice might protect them. Craig, what does your conscience tell you to do? And now let me introduce a man of very high conscience, a fellow conservative, a fellow Christian, a rotating co-host, and one of my very best friends. And he likes Trump a lot more than I do. We're on the same page with a lot of things. We both agree that Trump's articulating a lot of real good policies right now. I think I'm perhaps a little more skeptical about whether Trump will go along with them or not. But I wanted you to hear from somebody else today, too. So say hello to my good friend, Mike Friedenberg.
Well, hey, Bob, thanks for having me on today. Let me just give a little bit of background on myself. I've been involved with conservative politics for many decades. Originally got involved based upon my conscience telling me I couldn't sit aside while, abortion tragedy was destroying our country. So that was originally got me off my butt to get out there and get active. But since then, I was involved with the free market organization, the Adam Smith Institute, which was geared toward promoting capitalism and the market solutions to issues. I write for National Review on military matters and issues as well. So
I'm guessing National Review wouldn't like a pro-Trump article these days.
No, in fact,
they are on that list of the conservatives.
A funny story where I was not writing a pro-Trump article, but I wrote an article that I mentioned Trump that I did not trash him, and they wouldn't publish it because I wasn't trashing him.
Wow. They have such a history of being a fair magazine. They've kind of become the National Review special Trump at all edition.
Let me just say something. The National Review by far and away is, in my mind, the highest quality of the conservative magazines out there. By far and away, the most read. They have excellent writers, really high level, but they have, in my mind, missed the boat on this whole Trump thing.
However, Dennis Prager wrote a very excellent article, and he was taking that lesser of two evil things. I'm going to hold my nose. And wasn't that published by the National Review?
Yeah, it was published by the
National Review.
So
you got to give them credit because they knew that was a view they didn't agree with.
And Dennis Prager had the stature to get it published.
Yeah.
But I can tell you, I have read literally hundreds and hundreds of anti-Trump articles from every possible perspective.
On the other hand, Breitbart.com, which I also respect, they tend to be so pro-Trump that I get the feeling that on the other side, they're not always being objective. They're almost like an opposite pole of the National Review.
It would be close to an opposite pole. I'm not quite sure if they're as positive as National Review has been negative. Some of the stuff they have published in National Review, I would just say it's been kind of surprising because it's been so radically negative with such inflammatory language that it's almost like you wouldn't think it was National Review.
There's Bill Kristol's magazine too.
The Weekly Standard, which is also an influential magazine. It's not the same influence as National Review if you look at readership.
Well, but Bill Kristol seems to think it's so influential that he can handpick our next president for us.
Well, I don't know
what color the sky is in his world.
I've read lots of articles by David French, the candidate they're putting forward.
Yes.
And he's a bright guy. He's an attorney. He's served his country. But he wrote one of the most harsh, most unbalanced articles I've ever read on Donald Trump. And I call it Trump derangement syndrome. And it's where people that are normally more common sense, very bright, high IQ, sharp people seem to lose all sense of perspective. So what I like to do is put a little bit of perspective into what we're looking at here.
Okay.
So one of the things I'm going to say is that, in my opinion, since Ronald Reagan was in office, we have not had a conservative Republican win office, and we have not had even really very good conservative candidates running.
And yet every one of them thinks they're the next Ronald Reagan.
They say that, but I'm going to say something here. If you look at the positions Donald Trump holds, stated positions, and in fact, particularly on trade, I'm going to talk about trade here. Donald Trump has a position on trade very Reagan-esque, and the party has moved to the left on trade. That's my view. And that is a statement. We have moved to the left. We've adopted a sort of utopianist view of trade, a view where we unilaterally open up our markets and do not expect our trading partners, such as China, Mexico, Vietnam, even South Korea, we don't expect them to open up our markets. We have China ripping us off to the tune of $300 billion per year in intellectual property, including tens of billions of dollars of military technology they have used to move their military modernization program ahead by decades. And at the same time this was happening, they were not penalized. We continue to just continue with these same policies. So I'm going to say that Trump, on the trade positions, is far closer to Ronald Reagan was on those trade positions.
Let me say something about the trade, because I've gone back and forth, and I see the points Trump's trying to make, and I also see the point of conservatives who are saying that, well, we're taxing people to death, so no wonder they want to go overseas. But I will give you this. I've been hearing Trump talk about trade for so many years, long before he was even talking about becoming president.
Decades.
That if I had to pick one of his conservative Correct. Issues that seems pretty consistent, I doubt that he would change his mind on that. There are a lot of other issues, though, that I hear him and Han go back and forth. And I mean, there's a list of things that if he really did them, I think would be wonderful. And a lot of things people are criticizing him over. I'm going, hey, I like this. However, I'm just not always sure he's going to really do them.
It will save. So let's just put trade aside for a second. But I will say this. My opinion is his position is on trade is much more conservative and much more real world. And if we adopt the policies, let's get an example. Reagan, when he came into office, implemented a lot of tariffs. Harley Davidson, the icon company that it is, a premier American brand company, was about ready to go under due to cheap Japanese imports flooding the market. Reagan came in and said, hey, we can't let this happen. He put in a 5-year plan of tariffs. Harley Davidson was able to reorganize. And within 3 years, they were back on their feet and they said, hey, Reagan administration, we no longer need these tariffs. You know, let us go out and compete. So the thing is, in the real world, not the world that the ivory tower world of academia, if you want freer trade, you've got to fight for it. If you're not, China is a country that does not believe in efficient markets. They don't believe in free trade. What they believe is absolute competitive advantage in trade, and they've been getting it. So we've been trade dupes. They're waging a trade war, and we've not even been responding. We've not been defending. And let's go back over here to the blue collar working class in this country. And my circle of friends is largely white collar, professionals, attorneys, doctors, people being successful in business, people who have education. So that group of people is a lot of the folks I talk to. But I will say this, one of my biggest disappointments with the Republican Party for many, many years now is just how unconcerned and how insensitive they've been to the plight of the working class people in this country. And it's been devastating. When you're a 40, 45-year-old person and you lose your job and your manufacturing is taken away, not because your manufacturing could not compete, but because the Chinese government directly subsidized it to destroy that industry, then they bring the prices back up. And then the Republican Party says, no, don't worry about it. You can just get a job as a high-paid IT specialist. That's silly. That's callous. And the Republican Party has been callous to the working class. Donald Trump, like Ronald Reagan, reaches out to the working class. Ronald Reagan, let's not forget, got the Teamsters Union's endorsements both times he ran.
Well, the other thing that's interesting, and I'm not at all comparing Trump to Reagan, but there is one commonality, and that's that Reagan was also under a great deal of criticism for being a loose cannon, being an actor. He had been governor, but even before he became governor, they said no political experience. And so I remember people back in the 80s talking about how Ronald Reagan's just deranged. He's out of his mind. We can't put his finger near the trigger button for the missiles. So I did hear a lot of similar things with Reagan.
And let me just say this. Reagan is the best vote I ever cast for a national election by far and away. And I'm not trying to sit there and I think that Trump is the equivalent of Ronald Reagan.
No, they're not. I'm just saying in that one area, the kind of criticism that Trump's getting, people forget because Reagan's been kind of canonized by everybody. Everybody wants to claim, even Democrats want to claim affiliation with Reagan sometimes. But in his day, Reagan was under a great deal of criticism. And I did hear a lot of similar things.
Well, they were calling it cowboy diplomacy. They were very fearful of it for Ronald Reagan. And the thing is, with Trump coming into office, I hear the conservatives, and it just makes me laugh. Conservatives talking about how he's going to destroy the conservative movement. And I look at where we are from where we were 20 years ago, and it just makes me laugh. We have gotten our butts kicked royally over the last 20 years. And if we lose the Supreme Court, people are pointing to advances we made at state level, state level offices, the governorships, and the governors trying to do innovative things. If we lose the federal Supreme Court,
it won't matter.
They will shut down a lot of the innovations. We're going to lose states' rights.
We've practically lost it anyway because Kennedy votes based on what side of the bed he got out of. But at least there's a 50-50 shot with Kennedy. There'll be no more 50-50 shot if they put on even one more liberal justice.
Exactly. We'll have lost the court. So obviously that's one that's been brought up a lot. But it does make me laugh when we talk about the great conservative movement. I believe in conservative principles. But let's be fair and let's be honest. We have not been very successful over the last 20 years.
Well, except for the irony that we were very successful getting the Congress back, but then that Congress turned out to just be spineless.
Well, we put people in office. you know, people last gasp, desperation, putting people in office, and they are too afraid to do anything because they've been cowed by the media, the press. You know, they've been cowed by Hollywood. They've been cowed by the left-stream media. And so here's another thing is I want to put out there is that the value that Trump, the credit Trump should get for challenging political correctness head on, I think a lot of people do not give him as much credit as they should, because doing that, we haven't had anybody do it. Now, he says things that make me wince. He says things that make me cringe. But I'm going to tell you, when I look at the whole equation of having somebody that's at least willing to stand up and challenge the media and the press and lead the way and give a chance for somebody that maybe says things a little bit less bluntly to come behind him, I think we don't give him enough credit for that.
And I can vouch for Mike, because there are times when Mike and I get together to just chat and pray once a week, and sometimes we'll turn the news on, and we've both cringed at some things that Trump has said, but we're trying to weigh all things being equal right now.
Exactly. So let's take a look at the Muslim issue. Okay, when Trump said that there's a Muslim problem, he was excoriated, he was attacked, he was, you know, people jumped up down and screamed. But when I heard him say it, I thought to myself, you know what? What's more accurate? Talking about the infinitesimally tiny percentage of Muslim terrorists that you have to look under a microscope to find somewhere in the Muslim population? Or is the fact that 80% of the mosques in this country are Wahhabist mosques, that they promote Sharia law, which says the Sharia should be supreme to the Constitution? That's a problem that's far greater than just a
tiny majority. Other stats. I read a bunch of Muslim stats one time in an informal debate I was doing on this show. 80% of Muslims all over the world believe that wife beating is natural. 80% of Muslims in Jordan, college students are supposed to be the most liberal and progressive, believed that that was normal and natural. So, you know, it was a big elephant in the room when he said we have a Muslim problem. Of course we have a Muslim problem. He wasn't saying all Muslims. He wasn't saying they weren't peaceful. That's the other thing. People start putting words in his mouth. Now, Trump's words in their own right can be very offensive. But for Pete's sakes, they're offensive enough. Don't go putting more words in his mouth that he didn't actually say. We'll be right back.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net. When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric, Incorporated, license number 480539. WNS Electric.
Looking for a new book you won't be able to put down? Push the Winds Around is a romance set in the context of science fiction. Dr. Brandon Krieger is given the opportunity of a lifetime, a psychologist's dream. Through the usage of his physics professor friend's time machine, Brandon travels 20 years back through time in an attempt to change one man's destiny. Tom Kyle, a convicted and unremorseful murderer, is located in the past when he was a 6-year-old boy. Brandon's mission? To alter Tom Kyle's path and prevent him from being a vicious killer. Matters are complicated when Brandon finds himself falling in love with young Tom's mother. Push the Winds Around, a novel by Bob Siegel. Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to 1170 The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Honored today to be joined by one of my best friends and occasional co-hosts on The Bob Siegel Show. Say hello again to Mike Friedenberg.
Well, Bob, once again, I am very pleased to be able to be on your show. Thank you for having me. I do know that there's people of principle that are very concerned about Donald Trump. And I don't think I've read all the negative stuff about him, but I've read lots of negative stuff about him. And what I think has happened is that, you know, he basically rubbed people the wrong way, some of the people the wrong way in the conservative movement as he got his campaign going, you know, his blunt manners, his crude manners
and his manners for Cruz.
Yeah, and his Cruz, exactly. And so basically, it's just human nature. When you make form an opinion, you have a tendency to start to look for everything negative you can, and you ignore some of the positive things. Now, I started off supporting Scott Walker. Then, after Scott dropped out, I looked at Cruz. I looked at Rubio. I decided that Ted Cruz looked like the guy that was most likely to shake things up.
Yeah, and I liked Ben Carson, and I liked Carly Fiorina. When they dropped out, I liked Ted Cruz. I had some Ted Cruz delegates on our show. Yeah. We were pushing him, and we were saying, all of us want Cruz. Unfortunately, I think it was about a week or so later that Trump ended up getting the presumed, at least, haven't had the convention yet, the presumed nomination.
But even as in my mind, as I was supporting Ted Cruz, I had paid attention to some of the things that Donald Trump said. And two things that caught my attention that he brought up, multiple things actually that kind of made me think, wow, this guy is pretty gutsy. One of the things is in the first debate, he brought up trade. And he brought it up from the perspective, not the mindless, you know, free trade romanticism that we have right now that ignores reality and the facts and the statistics. And we're just talking about free trade stuff. He talked about possibly doing something to achieve freer trade. So that was one that caught my attention. Then the other thing that he talked about was defense reform. And, you know, that's near and dear to my heart, Bob, is I believe that right now we are wasting hundreds of billions of dollars every few years in our Defense Department. And the Republicans have done a miserable job of holding people accountable
for
that.
Let people know, where can they find you? Mike has written some excellent articles on defense that has been published in National Review. Now that he said something about Trump,
if you just
maybe
go under,
he won't get published.
Under my name, Mike Friedenberg, and you put National Review, they'll bring up the archive of all my articles.
Will they ever publish one of your articles again? Or have you soiled yourself
by saying
you're Trump?
I believe so, but I have to be honest. When I looked, you know, when it takes me 40, 50, 60, 70 hours to get an article done, including all the research, I put it in there, and then somebody writes off an article blasting Trump, and it takes them half an hour, and they get 3,000 comments, and I get, you know, when I'm competing with the anti-Trump stuff, I just...
Hey, I know, Mike. Don't even write about Trump next time. Just put in the byline, I hate Trump, and then write, now that I've got your attention, here's what concerns me about the military, and maybe it'll get published.
No, it was just interesting. Right now, the people are consumed with Trump. It's all Trump all the time.
Well, it's understandable. And look, I think you're like me, Mike. I'm very grieved at the civil war that's going on amongst conservatives. We already knew there was a civil war brewing between conservatives and the Republican establishment. But real, honest to goodness, conservatives, that includes evangelical Christians, but not limited to Christians, with honest values. And I think we all need to cut each other some slack, because I completely get it. Why people don't view, I don't view Trump as a conservative. I view him as a populist who's presently articulating some conservative ideas. I think you think he's a little more of a conservative than I do. But I totally understand why my fellow conservatives feel they can't vote for him. I would hope it would go both ways, though, and I would hope that they would understand why we say, look, he wasn't our first choice or second or third or fourth or fifth, but he's got the nomination, and we just can't have a liberal Democrat in office, and that they would understand that point of view.
Well, the thing is that for me, one of the reasons I'm a Christian and one of the reasons I'm a conservative is what I look in the world, it matches what I see in reality. When I take a look at the Christian worldview, the nature of man, the sin nature, the fact that you man is both capable of doing great evil and great good. And likewise, my conservatism is a pragmatic conservatism. If it can't work in the real world, then it's not a legitimate philosophy. This ivory tower conservatism, you know, which can only work in the university, you know, I've had conversations with people on some conservative things where if I were to substitute in a few different terms and things like that, I could have been talking to a communist, especially libertarian conservatives. I think that they get to this very fine line of something that just cannot exist, that you're tilting.
I agree. I would love to live in a libertarian society, but I don't think there's ever once been a country that's lived under one. America's the closest we've ever come, but America isn't a pure libertarian, the way people like Stossel would.
I would say I would like to live in a conservative society because, frankly, there's a lot of things about libertarianism I don't like. They promote a radical individualism, which I think is very unconservative and certainly
kind
un-Christian.
Of more closer to the Ayn Rand.
But the Ayn Rand. Yeah. And then there's a wide variety of libertarians out there. There's plenty of Christian libertarians. My brother is a Christian libertarian.
Well,
there's
they're a nightmare with national defense, but in terms of the freedom from the government interfering with our lives, if that's how we're defining libertarianism, I'm right with
them.
Well,
they're natural allies with a legitimate conservative, because right now I might draw the line at the size of the government. We do need some government, but we're so far from being at a limited government level that, of course, I'm going to be allied with libertarians on a majority of issues.
Exactly.
And so they're political allies, and the foundational philosophy that they come from reminds me of liberation theology, where even with some of the Christian libertarians, where they seem to have substituted libertarian principles and given them higher precedence than Christian principles. And well, I do see that happen.
And a lot of ideas sound good, but yeah, like you're saying, does it work? Like when people look at the borders, we need to be compassionate. Let's just take our borders down. Let's be compassionate. Well, La Raza, that's really behind a lot of this stuff with the borders, they're using the word compassionate as bumpkin for the masses. What's really going on with La Raza is they believe California and other southern states should be given back to Mexico. A lot of people don't realize that's the real agenda behind this. They just say, oh, I need to be compassionate. Jesus told me to be compassionate.
Yeah, and that takes us naturally to the a more recent controversy in the media with Trump going after Judge Curiel, who...
Which, again, I think we both agree that was a comment better left unsaid. But you're going to cut some slack as to why he made.
First of all, I'm going to say I don't think he should have done it. I wish he. Would
I don't
just,
think he should have done it.
I think it would have been nice if he just, you know, settled the Trump lawsuit, so it wasn't a distraction. But that's not the way Trump is, and that's just the reality.
Okay, we'll be right back. Bob Siegel. Looking for a church? Maybe not. Perhaps you've had your fill of churches. Maybe you even grew up in the church. Maybe as a kid you were dragged to Sunday school against your will. Maybe you used to throw spit wads as Mrs. Pumpernickel tried desperately to interest you in the missionary journeys of the Apostle Paul. You may have grown up listening to long sermons, anxiously looking at your watch to see how much of the game you were missing at home on TV as the pastor made his 97th point. Or perhaps you were not raised as a Christian at all. Instead, you have merely encountered Christians. Maybe some obnoxious personality tried to shove the gospel down your throat using all the tact of a lawnmower in a barber shop. Well, my friend, perfect Christians don't exist because perfect people don't exist. That's why Jesus died for our sins. So I'm not going to tell you that the people of Skyline Church are perfect. I'm just going to tell you that we come real close. No, Actually, you'll just find people who struggle with life the same as you. But we're honest about the struggle, and we help each other with the struggle. What you will find is a church that takes the love of Jesus Christ seriously. After all, his message is one of mercy and inclusion, and we don't need 97 points to talk about God. Ask anybody. Our sermons have never made more than 96 points. Skyline Church at 94 in Hamishaw, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m. The tide is slowly turning, probably quickly turning. We're in the middle of an election year here to talk about it. With me is my good friend, Mike Friedenberg.
So back to Judge Curiel and something that was initially reported, which was a bit confusing to try to get all the facts out, was that Judge Curiel was part of La Raza. And, you know, there's the Council of La Raza out there, National Council of La Raza. And then apparently there's another organization called the San Diego La Raza.
Right.
Association of Attorneys.
They're not the exact same organization.
No, they're not. They're not the same
organization. But still, the name La Raza has some meaning.
Well, yeah, the La Raza means the race. So, you know, when I first heard La Raza, I thought, okay, this is a radical left organization, a bigoted racist organization. I mean, the term the race. Just imagine if I started a German-American association called Das Volk.
Well, and even if this judge is not a racist, but who's the one bringing up the race if they're in an organization that's called the race?
So it is a race focused organization, and it is looking also that Judge Curiel does support open borders. He supports a number of positions which are contrary to Trump, and Trump has been the point person on securing the borders. So
here's the thing. Why didn't he just come out and say, I think this judge is biased. Right. I think he supports open borders. When he just comes out and says, hey, by the way, he's a Mexican. I know what he meant, but people are out there are too dumb. They go, what do you mean? Oh, so Trump hates Mexicans. And that's not what he meant. But he does talk without a filter. And then he tries to walk it back.
And
the
now
next
that's
day.
The one thing that's another thing I've been trying to figure out what's going on with Trump, you know, analyzing. And what I figured out is that I believe that you are seeing the authentic Trump.
Because he's unscripted.
And it's unscripted, but you're seeing the authentic Trump, warts and all. He's not filtering out the bad parts of himself, whereas there's a lot of people that hold elected offices that have vile, you know, personal conversations that don't have good values and principles, but they hide that from the public.
You're hearing Trump think out loud, sometimes before he's even settled an issue. But what you're not seeing is somebody that goes to focus groups and has 10 different people in his advisor cabinet telling him what you can say this, you can't say that, you're going to offend them, so don't say this.
So, for example, an example of one of the things I found pretty admirable that actually perked my interest in him was in one of the debates, they brought up the issue of torture. All the other Republican candidates fumbled around and, oh my heavens, we can't talk about it. And Trump just said, you know what? Has to do with stopping a weapon of mass destruction from going off in one of our cities. We need to use whatever means are necessary, including waterboarding and more severe methods if necessary. Now, here's the thing is, I've always believed that if a president's not willing to save a city with hundreds of thousands of people by using whatever means necessary to do it, I don't want him as president. And Trump brought that up. And what's very interesting is I've been following this issue with the torture stuff because it never made any sense to me that torture doesn't work. It will work. Now, you don't want to use it willy-nilly. You have to use it as part of an overall program. But if you need to use it, you need to use it. Well, he brought it up, and recently they did a poll, and just two-thirds of Americans agree with Trump. To save a city, that they believe that you should be willing to use torture to stop that.
Well, it's also debatable whether waterboarding is torture. It's not torture as we normally think about it.
We can go over where the line on the torture is, but my own personal thing is when you have vile people out there contemplating mass destruction of thousands and thousands of people, it's not even a lesser of two evils. You are basically, your goal is to do moral good by saving and stopping an attack. So if you have to do that, Now, as I said, if there's an alternative way to get the information, I'm all for that. But if you come to a time constraint and that's the only way to get, and Trump had the guts to say it, and the vast majority of Americans see. See, that's what I'm saying, is he's talking like that. Okay, the rally. Yeah. You're going to the rallies there. And I've thought this before. You see some punky guy, you know, who's been, who lives in this country with his freedom secured by people who fought and died for it, out there trying to shut down people's free speech. And this is an overly entitled, you know, spoiled brat. And you think, you know what? I'd like to punch the guy in the face. Now, you don't do it. You control yourself. But Trump
says it out loud.
Trump says it out loud.
And he's since stopped saying that. But now we have people punching his people in the face.
But think about the hundreds of thousands, not million, maybe a million, but hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people that gone to Trump rallies. Very little violence at them. Very, almost inconsequential. Every little thing has been blown up and rehashed by the media.
Look at how they spin it. And it just boiled my oil when both Obama and Hillary and Bernie came out with that obligatory, oh, I renounce the violence, of course. But if Trump would just tone down the rhetoric, maybe we wouldn't have. And so when all's said and done, the story is that we have violence at Trump rallies because of Trump instead of violence at Trump rallies because of people who are burning the American flag. And I'll say it, they're holding up a Mexican flag. Now, there's nothing wrong with the Mexican flag unless it's being held up while an American flag is being burned. Doesn't that tell us right there that somebody's onto something?
Why are we at an American political rally or protest wave Mexican flags? I just don't see it. But regardless, let's go back here to, and what's very sad is principled conservatives violated their own principles when the violence broke out in Chicago. We had people like Rubio and Cruz, both
they
basically—
blame, they kind of blame Trump for what happened.
Basically doing what the liberals are doing right now. Gave the talking points to the Hillary Clinton folks.
I renounce the violence, of course, but I call upon Donald Trump to talk. Look,
that was disturbing.
Trump, you know, Trump has had a lot of bad rhetoric, but when somebody's violent, they are responsible. And when I hear the pundits say, this is democracy in action, that is not democracy. Yeah. That is anarchy. Well, they're entitled to their free speech. Yes, but their free speech doesn't come at the expense of someone else. Their motive was to shut down free speech. So let's be very clear about
that. And it didn't start with Trump. We've had people in threatening violence, using the threat of violence to shut down free speech all over our college campuses, all over the country.
Anytime any conservative goes out to a college these days, they're being shut down.
So they migrated over to a Trump rally.
And college professors are encouraging the students to shut them down. That's what's really sad.
Well, and they migrate to a Trump rally, the same folks that have been shutting down the free speech all over the country. And then we have conservatives, allegedly principled conservatives, who, to be fair, generally are principled. But in the eagerness to try to win points in an election, you have people do things that just really are unfortunate, but it happens in every election.
Okay, I'm here with Mike Friedenberg. Mike, hold with me. We've got one more segment when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
You've already heard some of the wonderful customer reviews of the Dangerous Christmas Ornament, but now listen to some highlights from a professional review by Lisa Ruth of Communities Digital News. The book is literally a page-turner that will delight children and adults alike. Readers will find a piece of themselves in Mike, whom Siegel portrays perfectly. He develops the 12-year-old deftly and makes him real to the readers. They will adore Aunt Lorene. They will remember their first love and the pain of betrayal from a friend. Caligula the cat is a wonderfully clever addition to the story. He steals the book with his caustic insight, making all readers wonder just what their own pets would say if they could talk. The real gift of the Dangerous Christmas Ornament is the lessons it weaves amid the adventure. It reminds us of the social and personal responsibility we share and the repercussions of our actions on those around us. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament has adventure, entertainment, and some extremely important lessons. What more could you ask for in a book?
Well, Well, Mike, we're down to our last segment. The time goes by far too quickly. We'll probably be right in the middle of something when it's time to sign off. But let me thank you for coming on. And, you know, you're putting a little bit on the line because I'm sure you have a lot of fellow conservatives right here in San Diego that it's going to leave a bad taste in their mouth that you're defending Trump. Again, I want to remind everybody that Trump was not Mike's first choice, nor mine. But we're trying to look at the reality of the situation. We're down to two choices. I remember an old Laurel and Hardy routine where they were ordering ice cream, and the guy, the waiter says, we have only two flavors. We have pistachio or vanilla. And so Ollie says, what do you want, Stanley? And Stanley says, I'll take chocolate. No, folks, the choices are pistachio and vanilla. Deal with it.
One scoop of each.
There you go.
Okay. So
one scoop of Hillary, one scoop of Trump. Boy, there's a tasty dessert.
So I want to say this. I have read everything I can, both negative and positive, about Donald Trump. And I'm going to just say this flat out. A conservative who believes that Trump is equivalent to Hillary Clinton has a very distorted view of reality. I'm just going to say that. I just truly believe they do have a distorted view. They've let their dislike of Trump influence them to an emotional degree that they can no longer filter information accurately. To sit there and say that is just boggles my mind. I'm going to be blunt. I'm going to say that, but I do believe that's happened because Trump, you know, he's not George H.W. Bush, George W. Bush. Decent men, you know, gentlemen, you know, certainly George W. Bush, Christian, you know, they weren't conservatives in my mind, but they were very decent people. You know, John McCain, you know, a very decent person. Mitt Romney, I had my questions about whether he was hardly even a Republican, but I said he's somebody who's claimed to be a Republican. He had changed positions. Let's say voted for him. So I'm going to just say
he would have still been a better president than Obama.
And I voted for him, even knowing what he did in the city, you know, the state of Massachusetts. So I'm going to say here is Trump's going to be coming into a government where there's three branches of government. The military is not going to be co-opted and become Trump's minions. The military right now is filled with people that love their country. They're principled people. In general, they might be a little more politically correct than I like, but that's certainly not going to play into Trump's hands. So we don't have to worry about that. We have a Congress. We have a Supreme Court. Trump is going into a situation where he's probably going to be a little frustrated because he's been used to running a private corporation where he's the head honcho and he can get everything he wants to get done. So he's going to try as hard as he can to get some things done. I do believe he's going to try to secure the border. He is definitely going to try to get better trade agreements. And let me speak about trade for a second, because the trade agreements, he's not going to be able to 100% control the trade and how things are done to trade. There's a huge, powerful, entrenched lobby there that he's going to be fighting. But if he can get anything a little bit fairer there, you know, a little bit so that we pay more attention to the jobs that are being lost. We have been losing jobs in industries that could still actually be made cheaper here in the United States than in China when you factor in the cost of materials and the cost of transportation. The reason we've lost those jobs is China directly subsidized those industries for the express purpose of destroying companies. So we need is don't be too freaked out about, you know, the, you know, Trump taking over his authoritarian, you know.
Well, and I will say this, I could imagine him doing executive orders too. And when people say that he's a narcissist, I really can't argue with that. But we've been living under a narcissistic president for the last 7 years. Maybe this narcissist will at least have a couple of conservative values to go with his narcissism. That's where we're at.
Listen, he's going to he has largely conservative planks in his platform with some populist elements. The populist elements, but I will say this, the trade issue is definitely a populist element, but I would contend that it's actually more conservative than we've had so far. But number two, not going after entitled reform, you know, that is definitely a populist element. But I will say this is that to have that as your main focus right now could have been a loser for us in the election, and you wouldn't have got anything done in Congress anyway. I'm just to be blunt, until it really the stuff hits the fan, we're not going to really get the entitled reform, and losing an election over it right now would not have made sense. So I actually have to agree with that populist perspective.
And then also on the borders, I do want somebody who's going to secure the borders better. Whether they do it with a wall or not, I really don't care. However, since the wall was the main focus, the main linchpin in his campaign, yes, He better build the darn wall if he gets the election. He better, if he comes back and says, well, when I said the wall, that's just my beginning. You know, when you're making a deal, you have your starting position. You know, and there's rumors that he already said that informally to the New York Times. I don't know if that's true or not, but Trump, if you win, and I think there's a really good chance he is going to win, you better just build that darn wall. And I'm using the word darn because there's FCC regulations. Oh, and also because I'm a Christian.
Hmm. Okay. So I do believe he should build the wall, but I really think that E-Verify, employer sanctions, things like that are going to have a far bigger impact. Entitlement reform in the sense that you don't come over here and immediately be able to start to get, you know, a bucket load of government services and benefits. All those things are going to have a bigger impact than the wall itself.
Right. But when people say it's impossible that Mexico is going to build the wall for us, no, it's not. All we do is say you build the wall or we cut off all foreign aid to Mexico. They'll build the wall in 48 hours if we say that.
There's a lot of ways.
This idea that they can't do it, it's unreal. That's baloney. It's just that nobody's had the brass to try it.
There's a lot of ways Trump could do it. For example, if he levels a 20% tariff on Mexican goods, and that's, he says that's going to the wall, then the wall is being built by
Mexico. Now, on the other hand, he doesn't have the authority to do all that without Congress. He could come back and say, I was going to build the wall, but Congress wouldn't let me. And I don't want to see him do it through executive order, but I want to see him at least try to keep some of his campaign promises because it's been a long time.
No.
Democrats, the problem with Democrats is they keep their campaign promises. The problem with Republicans is they don't, but the campaign promises Democrats keep are horrendous promises.
No, what we've seen in the last, you know, coming up on 8 years is a principled leftist. And their principles are different in how they believe the ends justifies means, but Obama, the idea that he's, you know, a person that had his finger in the wind. No, he stuck like a laser to what he wanted to get accomplished. And,
yeah.
and he was very successful in shifting this country to the left and destroying some of the, you know, helping destroy the country. Because I believe that Obama really believes the United States is a villain in the world.
Yeah.
That we owe the world something else. That our wealth and our success came on the backs of the rest of the world. I don't believe that. But Obama does, apparently.
And he's a sincere ideologue. Bill Clinton, on the other hand, when the Republicans took back Congress, did put his finger to the wind, went along with them on a lot of things, and then grabbed the credit for it. But at least the country was in better shape for a while.
Now, he partnered with Newt Gingrich to get a lot of things done.
Yeah.
And that was very successful. So Trump is not the end of conservatism, but he can provide a shakeup to conservatism that has gotten too much ivory tower, too unrealistic about some things. That we need to have a real world conservatism. And I think Trump can start a conversation. Don't agree with everything that Trump's saying. But I do believe that we really need a shakeup in the conservative movement. And if the conservative movement is not something that's attractive to the guy that's driving a pickup truck, that has American love in his heart and pride, that's a patriot, that has a shotgun, that believes in hunting, and that person feels they have to vote against Republicans because of their economic interests, there's something wrong with the party. And that's what we had. The middle America, the blue collar, the working class have been completely disrespected by the Republican Party since Ronald Reagan left office. And I believe that Donald Trump, you know, has been reaching out to that group, not completely. I don't believe it's completely cynical. I believe that he really does want to reengage with those folks out there.
Yeah, he's not the end of the conservative movement, but we can't say this too many times. One more liberal Supreme Court justice will be the end of the Republican or conservative movement. Folks, what is it about that you're not understanding? Are you getting this? The area of concern is the Supreme Court. On the off chance that Trump will give us a more conservative justice, it's worth taking the risk.
Yeah, absolutely. It's crazy to think that we can talk with, especially with the Supreme Court right there in the balance, to think that we could, it's sheer unadulterated lunacy by people who've lost their perspective. I call it Trump derangement syndrome. You know, people like Bill Kristol, other folks like that. It is craziness to think that we can handle another 4 years, especially with the Supreme Court handling.
Okay, Mike, well, in a few months when the elections really progress and we're getting into the mainstream election, seeing whether Hillary was indicted or whether she actually gets a nomination, we'll have you on again and we'll do kind of an evaluation of where we are at that point. In the meantime, though, thank you so much, my friend, for joining us. Always good to see you.
Well, Bob, thanks for having me on. It's quite an honor. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We'll see you next week, everybody.
Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170, The Answer, is sponsored by Bob Siegel.